It won't be.
Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go.
This is All About Wine, a talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009, featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're doing this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
Yay! All right.
There he is.
And here we are. Another exciting adventure of All About Wine.
Mm-hmm. Brought to you worldwide, from coast to coast and around the world, like it says. So
that's
pay
right.
attention. There will be a test coming up at the end of next week or week after. I forgot. It's a 1,200 question.
We missed our anniversary.
Yeah, we did. I don't know what happened. It's we did. And it's a big one. It's 15 years, I believe.
Yeah, 2009.
That's a big anniversary.
Yeah, we missed it. We're just getting so blasé about having anniversaries because we've done so many of them. We just don't get excited anymore.
It's a milestone. How many episodes? 779. Oh, that's ours. 607 episodes. 676 episodes.
Oh, 676.
Yeah.
Oh. Wow.
Definitely.
That's a goodly chunk there. Wow.
We have a couple of calls on hold, probably ready to go.
Yeah, well, we have a guest tonight, Joy and Patrick from Boutique Winery. Not boutique, but Boutique Winery. And they are sitting in the green room enjoying all the goodies we have for them in the green room. But let's bring them out onto the show and be sure to swallow your food, guys, so you won't have a mouthful of food from the green room. And welcome to the show.
Oh, I think you have Joey, too.
I have you both.
Here. There he is.
Yeah.
Hello, Ron. Hi, Patrick.
No. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
It's our pleasure, believe us. But Boutique, okay, we got to start out with the name. I mean, a little unusual. Why Boutique Winery?
You want me to build that one, or you want to take it, Patrick?
Oh, go ahead.
Well, what I tell everyone is Bob Mount, the founder of the winery, he bought this estate that was already planted in vines, and he also collected classic wooden boats.
Huh.
And he went to Lake County and said, hey, I want to build a little boat museum, and they told him no, because it doesn't fit with the ag zoning ordinance here. So he said, well, what can I build? And they said a winery. So he's like, fine, I'll build a winery and put my boats in it. So that's how Boutique came about.
Wise man. So you have boats. I checked out your website and everything. You have boats. How many boats are there still?
Well, at one time we had 15, I believe. Is that correct, Patrick? Was it 15?
That's about right. And then he has a few kind of classic cars and things like that, collectibles.
Oh.
Yeah, well, but the new, so when, unfortunately, Bob isn't with us anymore. He passed away in 2020.
Oh.
So with the new order around here, it was decided that most of the boats can be rehomed. And so they found another collector just as passionate about boats as Bob, and he took most of them to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. So they all pretty much stayed together. So they're up there for somebody's viewing pleasure. And then instead of boats now, we move some more equipment in for Patrick. Right, Patrick?
Yeah, it was always a, like Joey said, you know, it was a kind of a big spot to show off his boat, some of his cars, just collectibles that he's had. We've kept a few of his favorites, the ones that are most sentimental to him and Madeline Mount, his widow. And now, yeah, we also moved out some of the boats and moved in tanks because, you know, it was always a – when we started, the wine was – it was a very small production, small endeavor, and it's grown. So now we have – you know, we're making more wine. We needed more room. We're doing more from the estate that where we grow fruit from, as well as our neighboring vineyard. And so, yeah, we just needed the room. So, yeah. Also, we kept the name Boutique. It's a local favorite. We also produce wine under another label as well, called Exit West. And the mounts are a really, you know, I had the pleasure of working with Bob since 2017. And as Joey said, he passed away in 2020, and it was a really sad thing because he was the greatest boss. He was just a lot of fun and a really, really kind man. And so now we're carrying on the efforts, working with the kids, Aaron Mount and Andy Berg, the son-in-law of the oldest daughter, Monica. And so we're making a go at things and I think making some really good wine.
Yeah, you say tank, you don't mean like Sherman or, you know, any of that. You mean like wine tank.
Yeah, wine tanks.
Okay.
Good.
Okay. Well, you know, boats, classic cars, tanks.
Right.
tanks. Yeah,
no.
Collectible tanks. I wasn't quite sure.
We are collecting tanks, though, but just wine tanks.
Wine tanks. Okay. Joy, what is your background? Tell me your history up to here, and I'll ask Patrick next.
Okay, so I have been selling wine for, it's 21 years this year. I started here in Lake County back when there were only 4 wineries in the whole region.
Mm-hmm.
And took my first tasting room job a few years after that. I was headhunted for what is now the largest label here and started with them when we were 5,000 cases. We built up to about 100,000, and that role I ran the tasting room and then tasting rooms, and then I handled a whole region on the North Coast for outside sales, did distributor support, and then I got a lot of gray hair and got out of the business for a while and actually went to work for executive director for the Clear Lake Chamber of Commerce. And then I went to work for the State Board of Equalization, which sounds like tons of fun. but I actually was kind of the liaison for wineries and breweries when they would run into taxation issues with the state. And I got to be kind of the nice tax collector before the auditors came in. And then the pandemic took me in other direction. I've owned my own energy consulting company. Went to work for a tribal government. I've worked for a city government. And then about a year and a half ago, I circled back around and decided that's all too serious. And I got back into selling wine over in Mendocino County. And then saw this opportunity at Boutique to run the tasting room and help them out. So I came on here about 6 months ago.
Oh, wow. You had quite a history in the wine industry then, it seems. Your training, your knowledge of wine? Is that school trained or just being around it?
Just being around it. I did, once I got into the business, took some courses here with Mendocino College, but I just kind of always had a knack for sales and business and never got a formal degree, but I have put in a lot of time at learning all the aspects of the business, especially when we were all kind of startups here in Lake County back in those days.
Yeah, so many people are not formally trained. They're just, you know, jump into the pond with both feet and just learn from there. You know, that's actually that's how I learned too. So, Patrick, tell us about your history up to this point.
So I was born and raised in Sonoma County, and I grew up kind of in, you know, wine country, although it wasn't so much wine country back then. It was more cattle country than wine country. But I got an undergraduate degree at UC Berkeley studying molecular cell biology and worked as a researcher for a few years in the biotech industry. Didn't really love it. And I have an older brother that's a winemaker in Sonoma County.
Oh.
And I kind of caught the bug from him, so to speak. So as I learned about wine from him, I realized that I didn't really like what I was doing so much and staring at the seasons go by through a lab window. And I decided, and I miss Sonoma County and the area up here so much. And so I thought, well, I really like wine. I think I can make a career of it. So I went back to school, got my master's degree in enology from CSU Fresno State. And when you say, you know, you learn it by jumping in, that's what you do, I think. Cause
I think so.
Getting a degree is great. It's very helpful. Having a degree in science is very helpful to understand the background and the underlying features of chemistry, biology, et cetera. But, you know, it's like getting a cooking degree. It means you know something about cooking. It doesn't mean you can cook.
And that's very true, yeah.
So I worked my way from the cellar and, you know, all the way up. When started in the cellar at Peter Michael Winery and then worked as enologist at Rudd for David Ramey and then as predecessor Charles Thomas. And then I left and went to Lewis Cellars, worked for Randy Lewis for a few years. And then this was all in Napa. I got, you know, I was living in Sonoma and finally moved back home for a shorter commute and worked for Paul Hobbs for several years. And then Rudd decided to hire me back as head winemaker. I was there for 6 years as head winemaker, and I've had other head winemaking jobs at Spring Mountain and then been consulting since 2014, so about 10 years now. And I make wine under my own label that I own. I didn't start the brand, but I purchased it. It was from a friend of mine who grows grapes in Bennett Valley, and that's where my family, that's where I grew up, and that's where my folks still live. They have a little vineyard. And I make wine under the Gray Stack label, that's mine. And then I work for a few other people making wine, and Boutique is also a client of mine, and I manage the vineyards as well as make their wine. So it's a big job up there, and it's a lot of fun.
It sounds like you put your... When you jumped in with both feet, you just sort of went sunk right up to your neck. It's emergent in the business. The Boutique Winery. That you told us how they got it started up to now. The winery itself. How many vineyards does? How many acres do you guys manage and take care of?
So, at the estate where the winery's at. There's 48 acres in vine.
Wow.
It's all in the Red Hills Appalachian, and it's at about 2,300 feet elevation, you know, plus or minus about 200 feet. So, and then that's all very red, iron-rich, volcanic soils, and that we only grow reds, mostly Bordeaux varieties. And then the other vineyard that we have is close to the town of Kelseyville. It's in Big Valley, AVA. and it's more flat, kind of closer to the lake, and we grow only Sauvignon Blanc there. So those we make white wine from that vineyard, and we make all of our different reds from the estate. And the Sauvignon Blanc vineyard is about 42 acres, and so between the two, you know, it's a lot of grapes. We don't use it all. We sell quite a bit.
That's
a lot. That would be a lot if we made it all ourselves.
That's a lot
so
of
we
grapes.
Like to keep it, yeah, we like to keep it pretty small and, you know, keep it very small, very handcrafted, small lot, small, you know, very, lots of attention to detail. And my job is I get to just kind of cherry pick what I like best from the different vineyards and the different blocks. Mm-hmm. And our annual production's around 3,000 cases at this point.
Total. That's it. And,
yeah, well, that's it.
You keep it small all the way through, you know. What, okay, going into the winery now, we know what your acreage is. We're going into the winery, stainless steel or oak, and what type of oak, French or what?
Yeah, so for the red wines at the estate, the grapes that we grow, like I mentioned, are mostly Bordeaux varieties. So Cabernet Sauvignon, we grow some Petit Verdot. We have Malbec, and then we also have a little Cab Franc and then quite a bit of Petit Syrah. So this is the Petit Syrah and actually the Malbec. We're there when the Mounts purchased the property. They're the oldest wines on the place. And so when I first started there, we do individual bottlings of each of the varieties. And then what I found is that, you know, what is the best of all are playing with blends from there. And the way that we make them is we have an assortment of like small stainless steel tanks. The sweet spot is like kind of 3 to 4 tons is mostly what we have. We have some larger or taller, skinnier tanks for Sauvignon Blanc that we use mostly for settling and bottling because all of our white grapes are all fermented in concrete eggs.
Oh, really?
And then fermented and aged in concrete, and all the reds are, you know, once they're fermented in stainless, they go to all French oak, and then it varies on the percentage in you.
And the amount of time, too, I'm sure it varies. Oak. Let's go back to this concrete age. What was the motivating factor to do that? You don't hear too many people using concrete age.
No, well, concrete is kind of, I call it kind of, you know, what's old is new again, because before stainless steel, which really took off in the 60s, and, you know, people like Robert Mondavi were big proponents of stainless steel, mostly because it cleans so well. You can really clean and sanitize tanks and wines a lot easier with stainless than what was traditionally used, which was, you know, wood, either oak or even redwood, and then concrete. Concrete's a cheap material that you can make a tank out of. Mm-hmm. And they've used it for, you know, for decades and centuries even. But they got away from it mostly in favor of stainless because of the sanitation issues. Well, a lot of folks back in Europe, they, you know, old wineries, they never got rid of their tanks at all. And maybe they never got rid of their sanitation problems, but as we kind of learn more about microbiological contaminants and issues that can affect spoilage, you know, we got better about how to keep wines clean. And the folks in Europe, you know, always, they loved their old tanks, their old concrete tanks, and said, you know, I wouldn't get rid of these if you paid me. And so it started a re-interest, a renaissance of why and what is good about concrete. And so then they started playing with stuff. And, you know, you can form concrete in all kinds of different shapes. The shapes that we use for our concrete Sauvignon Blanc tanks are all eggs, which is kind of a fad that's been around for...
You're right. Oh, yeah.
You know, I guess...
How many gallons?
They're typically, the larger ones are 480. The smaller ones are 320. We have 10 large eggs and 2 small eggs. So we've got, you know, baker's dozen almost, really. Egg farm.
Yeah, still pretty large, though. It's not like a little small tank when you start looking at those sizes. There's fairly large eggs there.
The first concrete tank I worked with, there were 2 that were purchased from Namblo in Napa in 2003. One went to Viadera and one went to Rudd. And so I worked with a 60-gallon concrete egg at Rudd. And, you know, it was kind of a question of, well, why bother? You know, what's so special about it? What's different than a stainless or wood? And those are the options, really, because you can have a stainless tank. You can have a stainless barrel. You can have a wooden barrel, all the different sizes. Or concrete, same thing. So,
or they're getting into some terracotta now, though, so that's a possibility in some places.
Same principle, which is
concrete.
Essentially there's a certain amount of oxygen intake in anything porous like concrete or wood.
Mm-hmm.
Stainless is anaerobic. You're not going to get any kind of oxygen, movement in that. So with concrete or wood, you know, the concrete kind of basically you can think of it as that balancing line of a slight amount of oxidation, like you get in a wood barrel,
mm-hmm.
without the wood flavor that you get in a wood barrel, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. Much. And it's interesting, too, that you would bring that up, because so many people like the wood, and, you know, keeping the grape, the pure grape flavors in there would be really quite interesting, I think.
Well, it makes it really nice wine. I used to do lots of experiments every year in stainless and concrete and wood and do all 3 and then kind of put together a blend. And you get different profiles from each one. I really, for our wines and for what we do, I really like the concrete. I mean, wood works well, but it gives a much kind of richer, softer wine that, believe it or not, it chemically tends to hold on to the most acid, although perceptually it tends to have the least, if that makes sense. Like stainless, you taste it and you think, oh, well, this is more tight, this is more acidic, this is more kind of shrill, if you will, as opposed to the wood, which is, softer, rounder, all the things that you'd expect oak would give it. But if you look at the pH and the TA, if you look at the chemistry between them, it's actually totally opposite. It's just perception. And so that's the nature of just the vessel itself.
Wow. And stainless concrete doesn't do that.
Concrete doesn't do that. It's a little closer to stainless, like if you look at chemistry. But, it's as far as like what it does, you know, from a flavor profile, it does soften a little. But it allows certain, I think, you know, certainly you can run analysis to prove it, but it allows certain esters and aromatics to form, which you get from a slight amount of oxygen, which just, you know, allows a really developed, beautiful, expressive nose.
I'm going to have to start seeking out some concrete wine, concrete fermented wines, to see the difference in them. It's not something, and which reminds, it leads me to the next question. Do you have it on your label, aged in concrete, or is it just something that people don't talk about?
No, I mean, we brag about it to you, and only in radio shows, you know, and things like that. We don't. I guess we don't make a big enough deal about it, you know. Everything is fermented in concrete. Our solvents.
I think you
and
should.
It's hard to miss when folks come into the tasting room because we have these big glass windows on the door that look right out at the concrete. So they definitely are a center of conversation to all our guests. And then Patrick's not aware that we've decorated the concrete eggs today for our Easter event on Saturday. So they're looking very festive at the moment.
That's wonderful. I'm so glad you did that. When I first started working with concrete eggs, I used to say, we should decorate these for Easter, and I never did. And my assistant winemaker, Rebecca Weinberg, who's now the winemaker at Quintessa, she does an Easter egg decoration contest every year with her eggs. She has eggs, too. And I was so jealous of that because I thought that's such a great idea. And it looks like people have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, well, there you go. You're gonna have festive eggs there tomorrow, or for your Sunday event. Then that's great. On this egg, people that come into the taste room obviously are interested and curious about the concrete, and it gives you a chance to start promoting that and talking about that. But why not on the label? Aged in concrete. I mean, that's all it would take just to create a little buzz out there.
Yeah, it's something we can think about for sure. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people use concrete now, but it's still quite novel, you know, and I think, like I mentioned at first, it started as a fad, especially the egg, because it's an egg-shaped, and that
right.
was originally developed by this guy, Mark Numblot, whose family in Burgundy had been making concrete vessels, tanks, and they're mostly like a big crypt, right? Like a big square concrete tank, and not necessarily even round, just concrete, just square, I mean, because that's the simplest way to form it. And a friend of his at Chapoutier said, can you do one in an egg shape? And the whole idea was, well, you know, it's ratio, height to width, it's the Fibonacci sequence, kind of golden ratio, all this stuff. And wouldn't that be interesting to try? And then it caught on. And because concrete is easy to form, that shape caught on. And now there's producers in Italy, and there's one here locally in Petaluma called Sonoma Cast Stone that have been making concrete now for 20 years, and that's where we got all the bars. And they're the best that I've worked with, because those have the ability, they have coils inside them that allows you to heat and cool the egg, which isn't, which is kind of it's important for white wine fermenting if you want to ferment at a cooler temperature.
Right.
And so it's nice to be able to set it and keep it where you want. It takes a little while because concrete is, you know, it's three and a half.
Doesn't cool down real
concrete.
Fast.
Yeah. No, it's like heated floors or something, you know. But once you get it there, it stays for a long time because it's so thick and it has such good insulation.
Well, when I first heard about concrete eggs, I heard that the benefit of it was the shape itself, and how it the wine can circulate and how the flavor profile is picked up and all that from the shape of the egg. And, you know, I never really pursued it because there's not a whole lot written on it that you can find about it at the time when I was trying to research it. But now I'm sure there's quite a bit more out there.
I don't know. I think it's a nice story that sounds good and people keep repeating it. So then it kind of becomes accepted. I don't know. I've been using concrete eggs for a long time. If one was in the shape of a barrel on its side or upside down or whatever, I don't think you're going to see a huge amount of difference.
Really?
I think it's nice. I think it's nice if there's not a lot of sharp edges. That's good for just stirring. That's good for, you know, it is good for the movement of the wine. It does, you know, it does have kind of, there is a flow during fermentation and the wine certainly circulates. So that does help. As far as if it were a cylinder or a square or something else, I mean, I couldn't tell you definitively, oh, yeah, it's so much better. But people keep saying that story ever since they first started it, and I think they just like it. I think mostly, I think they look cool. They look cool as eggs.
They really do.
We have eggs, and yeah, and our eggs are, you know, the way that they make them now, that you can, the larger ones, the 480-gallon ones, are eggs, look like Humpty Dumpty. The other ones, the smaller ones, are amphora, which is the same darn shape. It's just upside down.
So I really think you should promote that. That's something that, you know, that they're aged in eggs, because it's like any other type of specialty in wine. They jump on it and try to let you know. But, you know, aged in eggs might be something that you can cash in on. So it's just a thought there.
Fermented and aged in concrete, yeah.
Concrete eggs. Yeah. You got to use the eggs in there, because then people will go, eggs? And, you know, and it'll create a stir. all right. Now, we've aged your wines. Let's talk about your wines themselves. All right. You said you only do reds. I've got your side up here. I can see. The Estate Cabernet Sauvignon. That is aged in oak for how long?
Typically about 20 months, sometimes a little longer, 21, 22 months.
Wow.
In oak. And it's aged in all French oak, different coopers. You know, there's kind of a short list of favorite coopers that I've used forever. And I ferment everything. For reds, all the fermentations are done with native yeast. It's all native malolactic fermentation.
Oh, wow.
So it, we don't really, I add very little nutrients, almost nothing if I don't have to. And we ferment in those stainless tanks I mentioned 3 to 4 times typically. We bring it in cold, destem it, put it in the tank, keep it cold for about, we do a long cold soak, at least 5 days. And then to start the fermentation, mostly I just take the cooling off, get it, start heating it up.
Wow.
And then the yeast start doing their work, and then it's, you know, go, 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 punch down, pump over, and get the wine made.
That's what you do with all of your reds then? I mean, is that basic formula for all the reds?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, depending on what I'm trying to get from the wine or the varietal, you know, like sometimes I'll use more of whole cluster if I'm doing something like a fruity or white, like a Pinot Noir or Syrah or Grenache or something. For Cabernet, Cab Franc, can sometimes the whole cluster is kind of nice on Cabernet Franc. And for Cabernet Sauvignon, it's mostly just destemmed. I do a cold soak on pretty much all the reds. Unless I want something a little lighter, tannic, then, you know, I might do a much shorter fermentation cycle where, you just keep it on the skins less time. And don't extract so much from it.
The cold soak, what is the advantage or the profile that that's going to give it?
In general, what a cold soak does is there's on the skins, so we're talking red wine from red grapes. So what all the skins go in the tank with the juice, as opposed to white wines where you press all the grapes, get the juice removed from the skins, and then ferment the juice separately. So that's what we do for our Sauv Blanc. For our reds, all the skins go in with it. So it's a big, you know, must of skins and juice and seeds and you name it. And so when you keep it really cold, the extraction that you get from that must is you can extract more of the anthocyanins that are on the skin pigment, which are the color compounds,
right,
as opposed to catechins, which almost look the same. It just doesn't have a glucose molecule attached to it, which are the tannins. Now, you get a lot more tannins from the seeds than the skins, but you can get anthocyanins from the skins and some tannins, catechin, from the skins. And that dissolves it more better in an aqueous environment than an alcoholic environment. Once you start having alcohol is a great solvent. It'll start extracting more of that catechin. You're going to get a lot more tannin. So if you want to get more anthocyanin into your wines, do it early when it's not full of alcohol.
And the cold will stop the alcohol from forming and stop the fermentation from forming, so therefore you're starting that at the beginning. Okay.
So the cold
makes sense to me, anyway.
Exactly right. It's kind of keeping the yeast in from fermenting. So it's, the cold is kind of keeping the whole thing in suspended animation.
Mm-hmm. Wow, very good. That makes sense to me. That's interesting. excuse me. Malbec, same thing. How long is that aged in oak?
About the same time. Like we do, we bottle most of our reds about the same time, because a lot of them are blended. So we'll blend, like we do some blends. I do a red wine blend that's Cabernet. You'd call it Cabernet based, but even that, it's kind of majority minority of varieties. It's close to, or maybe as much as 50% Cabernet Sauvignon, and then it's got Malbec and Petit Sirah and Franc and Bordeaux. It's kind of got all the whole gambit, and it makes a lovely, lovely wine. It's our flagship for that Exit West brand. Then
is that the Runaround Red blend, or is that the Matty Mousse?
Yeah, that's right. So there's two. That's how we started playing with these blends. We started doing two blends for Boutique, and the blends were kind of just there. To kind of simplify things, it's kind of a feminine and a masculine blend. And the thought was kind of do a Bob and Matty. So Matty is more of the feminine style, and the components in that predominantly are Cab Franc and Petit Verdot. And I know those might not sound like real delicate varieties, but those are some of the softer, more like really just gentle, really aromatic, very soft tannin varietals that we make on the property, as opposed to the more masculine Bob blend, which is the Runabout, we call the Runabout, which is predominantly Malbec and Petit Sirah. So that's kind of big on big, which when I first made it, I thought, Jesus, this is going to be a monster. And it turns out it is kind of a monster, but it's a monster that works. Like it's not too much. It's not over the top, but it is a big wine and people absolutely love it.
Yeah. And the judges love it too. Patrick took us two double golds with the Runabout this year.
Wow.
San Francisco International Wine Competition and the San Francisco Chronicle, which if you know, double golds means every single judge at both those competitions gave it a gold medal rating.
Right. Yeah, that's fantastic. All right. That's quite a testament there. Yeah.
It's a crowd pleaser. People love it for sure, and I understand why. It's a great wine. But as I'm sure you know, when you talk to folks, everybody likes something different. Not everybody's going to like the exact same thing. And we're not trying to have please all palates. I think it'd be impossible. But it is fun to kind of showcase what the property can do. And so these blends are, I think, a great way to showcase just what we can do. And it just makes a really fun, interesting wines.
Yeah, sounds like a very good wine. Now, all these wines we're talking about here, all these reds, are they made to be aged? Or are they made to be drank?
Yes and yes. I mean, I think, anytime anybody asks me, what should I do? I say, buy a case. if you can afford it. And these wines are not, they're not as good as they are. They're an absolute bargain. But I say buy a case and then open one after, you know, a couple months. And if, and then open another one after 6 and a year and on and on and on. And then you can just see how long it lasts. Because a lot of times people say, well, how long will this last? And, you know, for me, I don't know. I've been making wine for 20 years and the wines just keep, you know, they a lot of the reds like this age really gracefully and really good. But I can't say, oh, well, it's going to last for, you know, your great-great-grandkids. And do you really care if they, you know, wouldn't you rather drink it instead of them?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's people used to come in, when I had the winery, they'd ask me, how long was reds going to last? And I said, well, you know, it depends on how you take care of them, too. I mean, it's not just the wine itself, but it depends on how it's being treated. If you throw it in the trunk of your car and drive around for the rest of the day, then it's going to last one day. But if you immediately go home and stick it in a wine-controlled wine refrigerator that you have, then it's going to last much longer. So, you know, it's I used to always hate it when people ask, because I never knew how they were going to treat the wine. And it's hard. I mean, you know, Joey probably, you know, gets asked that question a lot of times in the tasting room. And, you know, there's no definitive answer because of that. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm really glad you mentioned that. That absolutely is true. Yes, very much
so.
Yeah,
and as we've all probably heard from a million times, you know, wine is a living thing.
Yeah.
No, you just can't, even with all the science in the world, you can't break it down to the point where you can predict all that.
Well, I always just tell people, treat it as you would treat your best friend. You're not going to throw your best friend in the trunk and drive around all day. Keep it up in the car with you. Keep it cool. You know, don't abuse it, and it will return its friendship to you. So, you know, that's how I always look at it.
And then lock them up in a cold, dark cellar.
There you go.
It's always fun being one of Patrick's friends.
Yeah. I can understand that.
Hey, I'll leave you a corkscrew. You're fine.
Yeah. There you go. As long as it's the right cellar, then we're in good shape. Yeah. The Petit Sirah is, you didn't produce too much of that, only 101 cases. That's is that because there is limited plantings of it, or is it because you're picky?
I maybe both. Well, I mean, we've made a lot more. It ebbs and flows as far as how much we make. If you're looking at recent production, if the reason that it's so low is because we pilfered so much of it to go into the blend. So. That's just how much individual varietal Petit Sirah we bottle, which is, you know, 100% varietal. So yeah, at the beginning of harvest, well, actually technically, even you know, when the year begins, like right around now is when we decide, okay, how much wine should we make? And the reason that we have to decide now is because you have to buy barrels. So you have to know, like, okay, if it's going to be 40, 50, 60% new oak or whatever what it is. And you have to have some kind of idea of, okay, well, this is how much we think we're going to make. And do I have enough barrels? Do I have enough used barrels? Do I have space, et cetera? So we order them now, hopefully, to get them in by August, September when we need them. And it takes, you know, takes a long time. It takes 3 months to get them here, typically. And since they're French and they're built in France, shipping mostly air, when you think about it, it's not very efficient. But, you know, we kind of plan now and then for filling later. So when you look at some number like, well, we didn't make much Petit Sirah. Well, it's probably because, you know, we thought, well, let's make this much of this wine and this much of that wine. But all of our best laid plans sometimes go to hell, and, you know, we end up making a little more or less of one blend, or we get a double gold and everyone loves it and we sell out, and then it's like, why didn't we make three times as much? You know,
we could have sold more. Yeah, isn't that the way it always?
After the fact, it's a little tough, right?
Yeah. Well, you sell a lot of the grapes, like the Petit Syrahs and the Pinot Noirs and Cab. You have a big acreage. Do you sell a lot of those grapes?
Yeah, we've typically sold most of what we produce, and like I said, just kind of cherry pick what we like the best, what I like the best, and we have a crew. We have a full time crew of 5.
Oh, wow.
Led Caesar Gamora. He's kind of my right hand man in the vineyard and the cellar. So we're lean and mean. You know, it's me and Caesar, and then the vineyard guys help out with wine work, especially during crush. But we've got 5 guys in the vineyards, and they do everything. We need it, we bring in, a little labor contract help when we need to do big jobs where, you know, pruning, suckering, and harvest. You know, our guys couldn't possibly harvest everything for everyone and do the crushing with me.
Yeah.
That's kind of how we run it.
Sauvignon Blanc you told us about. Your rosé. Why rosé? And why rosé of Malbec instead of something else?
Well, what else?
Cab, Pinot Noir?
Oh, I don't know. Well, we don't grow Pinot Noir. And Cabernet, Cabernet Sauvignon rosé is, I think it gets too tannic. It's just not my cup of tea. Malbec rosé, you can make a really nice rosé out of Malbec. You just have to be careful because Malbec has so much color that you have to be careful not to get too dark. And we make it as a straight rosé. You know, we pick it and press it and put it in those concrete eggs. And when we press it, I just have to be really careful to press it very gently. So it ends up our yields are kind of crappy, but that's the best way to make it, not have too much, have it, you know, start to resemble a red wine. You don't want that. You
right.
Want, you
yeah. Can't call it rosé then.
Yeah.
Right?
Ron, if you could have tasted it before you asked that question, you wouldn't ask why, because I tell you, our Malbec rosé is a hit. Everybody loves it. And I had personally, I don't think I've ever had a Lake County Malbec in a rosé. And I can tell you, Patrick,
don't think I've ever had a rosé in a Malbec anywhere.
Yeah, it's not.
I think in France, like kind of Languedoc and Southern Rhone, you know, Malbec's used a little bit for rosé. It's not real popular. I mean, not as popular as kind of Gamay or Pinot or some of the others.
Gamay,
but
the grape, yeah.
Yeah, it's just tough though because we're hot. You know, we're not going to grow Pinot, and I mean, you know, I think for what we do, I think it works really nicely. But yeah, it's one of the things where we wanted to make it, and people always asked about it, and we thought, well, you know, let's give it a shot, and it worked.
Oh, yeah, I saw the rosé of Malbec, and I'm thinking Malbec rosé. That's because, like I just mentioned, I don't recall seeing a rosé made from Malbec grapes anywhere.
Well
you have to
it.
Come to Boutique to get it.
That's right. There you go. You say you don't grow Pinot Noir. Where does your 4 brothers Pinot Noir come from?
My folks' vineyard.
Oh, that's
one of the 4 brothers.
Oh, yeah. I understand.
Yeah, so my folks grow Pinot Noir on Snow Mountain. We planted it in 2000. And so the Mounts wanted to make some Pinot. They said, you know, can we get some of your family stuff? And so I said, sure, let's make it happen. And we did, I don't know, a ton and a half or something. We did a very small amount.
That's
maybe
not much,
10.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that year we also did, you know, and don't ask me why they wanted. I mean, the owners wanted to do Pinot, and I'm happy to oblige. You ask a winemaker, should we? They always say yes. You know, they always want to make it.
Always.
It's
a default
always.
Answer.
Yeah. It's, you know, should we? Absolutely. You know, a year down, 2 years down the road, if you can't sell it, then you kind of ask yourself, why the hell do we do this? But
that's right.
Time,
what was I thinking?
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it's fun to make stuff. And so I've made that wine for years. I know what it's going to do. And they tried it and they liked it. And they said, oh, well, we want to make some of this and have it on, you know, as part of our repertoire. And so we did it. And in addition to that, we did a Chardonnay from a Russian River.
I was going to ask about the Chardonnay, too.
Yeah. And for the hell of it, we also did a true Sonoma Coast Pinot from Wallala Vineyard, which is way out, you know, near the
water.
Wallala.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's way out, way, way out on the coast. And that's quite a nice Pinot, too. Very different, though. And yeah, and then the Chardonnay, you know, the Pinots are kind of made, we made them pretty traditionally. The Chardonnay we made in concrete, and we did it kind of like a Sauvignon Blanc. So we fermented it cool. We did not allow it to go through malolactic fermentation. It's on zero oak, and it's kind of that really pure, very pretty expression of Chardonnay without any oak treatment, which is a lovely wine.
That's when I had the winery. I had an un-oaked Chardonnay, and I really enjoyed it. And people, I tell them, you know, if you have a lot of oak in it, you're going to get all these other flavors. You're not going to taste the Chardonnay. This is an un-oaked. Try it. And people loved it. I mean, it just really surprised people because they're so used to having all that oak in a Chardonnay that they've lost the flavor of the grape. So,
yeah. It goes from a heavy wine to a light wine. I mean, oak definitely gives it body, or red.
But it changes the profile. I mean,
yeah.
It really makes a big difference. I tell people a lot of times, too, I like a big, heavy, oaky Chardonnay. And I said, well, I've always looked at a big, heavy, oaky Chardonnay is the winemaker saying, I got some flaws in this. Let me over-oak it to cover it up. And, it's one way to look at it. The AVA you're in, what is the AVA? Yeah.
So for the estate, it's Red Hills AVA. And the Sauvignon, it's Big Valley.
And those are sub-AVAs of Sonoma, our Lake County?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, there's about a dozen sub-AVAs now in Lake County.
That many? Wow.
Yeah, and Red Hills, our Sauvignon Blanc comes from Big Valley. There's High Valley. There's the Clear Lake AVA that's kind of rides the shoreline. There's the Guanac Valley. Let's see, what am I missing? The Kelseyville Bench, the Upper Lake Valley. Valley is our newest one. Benmore Valley is an old one going towards Mendocino County. So, yeah, there's quite a few of them now. And the Red Hills where the estate is really kind of the spillway for the Mount Conocti eruption. So, hence the red volcanic soils. Uh-huh. And it's probably a good 20 square miles of an AVA that kind of encompasses the southwestern shore of Clear Lake.
That sounds like one of the biggest AVAs then, from what you're saying.
I'd say, yeah, I think Red Hills and High Valley is a pretty big AVA, and they're all pretty decently sized. The only small ones are probably Guanac and Benmore and the Kelsey Bench.
Wow, they got that many AVAs there. That's just amazing. I lived in California back in the 70s, and I used to spend a lot of time Napa, Sonoma, Mendocino, Lake County, all that area up there. In fact, I loved the northern counties more than Napa, because at the time Napa was starting to become a little bit more commercialized and the northern counties were pure. But like you said at the beginning, there was very few wineries there at the time.
A lot of people don't know, Kendall Jackson started in Lake County, and now they have you know, 3% of the world's, or the, at least the United States market now. And when I started a little over 20 years ago, there were four wineries existing here. There was already about 8,000 acres of vineyards here because there were a lot of growers and everything was being sold over the hill to Napa and Sonoma. Now, you know, we have, I believe there's about 50 bonded wineries in
Oh, my gosh.
Not all of them are open to the public, but, you know, about half of them have at least seasonal tasting. And, yeah, it's a whole different world than it was back then. And then the other thing to note is we are pretty high altitude. The lake is the lowest point in the county, and it's at about 1,300 feet. We're up here on our estate at about 2,300.
Oh, wow. Do you get influence only from the lake, or you get any from the ocean?
Not so much from the ocean, and I'm sure, Patrick, you agree with that, where the Mayacamas on this side are pretty steep, pretty high, so not too much of that marine influence here. But the lake is so big, it acts like a giant swamp cooler during the growing season. So all that cool, moist air that evaporates up into the atmosphere comes down after sunset, and at times, you know, we can have a 30-degree change in temperature within a couple hours after sunset.
Oh, brr.
Yeah, but during a, you know, a 100-degree day, it's kind of nice.
I can imagine, yeah.
It's cool. You can sleep better in the evening here.
Yeah, this out on the porch, open up a bottle of wine, just enjoy the change of temperature is the way to do it. Yeah. Okay, Davey. So you got, you mentioned the double gold on the cab. Do you enter competitions? Do you have other awards of other wines?
Not really. We don't enter that many, you know, reviews or publications, things like that. I mean, you know, we thought we'd try it with, because, well, and the reason, I guess, is mostly we're kind of local word-of-mouth winery. And we have a following in our neck of the woods, but it's also important to get the word out to other folks. And periodicals can do that, but, you know, the uphill battle for us is that Lake County is always kind of this, you know, stepchild of Napa. It's like,
yes.
Growing up and working as much as I did in Napa and Sonoma, you feel it in Sonoma too, that like the center of gravity is Napa and then everything that radiates out isn't as important. And I don't know that that's really true. I think there's great sites and great farmers making great wine in lots of different places. And because it's just away from that center of gravity, it doesn't always get the same kind of attention. But
absolutely.
We did throw out that that new red, the Exit West, Enthusiast or something. And for a brand new wine unknown, I think we got like a 92 on it.
Wow.
Yeah, something it was like a 92. And then we are entering, JJ, our general manager, JJ Foster, he wants me to kind of keep entering at least a few competitions a year. So you'll start to see Patrick winning some more awards for us down the road, I'm sure.
The awards are awards, and I think they're beauty contests. I don't really give them much credit. What I like to do is take, you know, I like to take our wine and put a brown bag in it and take it to a dinner or a party or someplace where there's going to be a bunch of wine geeks bringing their fancy wines from wherever, Napa, Sonoma, you name it. And put that and taste it blind with all the others and see what people like. Because I'll put our Sauv Blanc up against anybody, anywhere. It's just fantastic. And our red blends will really turn some people's heads when they try them. And I'm sure that a lot of folks would, you know, if you just taste them and say, you know, what do you like? They're going to gravitate to these wines because they're just delicious.
And that's what I used to always tell people. I've never been a big awards fan myself. I think the biggest award that I get was when I was standing at the tasting bar pouring the wines and people are going, this is fantastic, I love this. That meant more than entering in the Florida State Fair and winning an award there or something else. So I understand.
Right.
But as an aside, Joey, you heard Patrick just now say the Sauvignon Blanc and the blends, those are the ones you need to enter into the contest.
Well,
I am
those
aware.
Are my favorite. Those are my favorite.
Hey, I've been drinking Lake County Sauvignon Blanc for over 20 years, and it's my go-to for a white. And I think we do it, you know, as far as Sauvignon Blanc regions, we do it better than most up here. And then these reds, I mean, I like you said, hearing the people at the tasting bar rave, and that has been my experience since I've been here, is raving, because Patrick knows his way around these varietals, and we definitely are putting out probably some of the more quality wines, I think, in the area. I mean, more of our neighbors have up production, and with that, you know, the quality has went down. We're
seems
still
to
all
work that way.
Focused and just really stand out.
What was I going to ask? I just got a blank. Well, Mike, you've been sitting in the background there taking notes and listening. Do you have any questions for Joey or Patrick?
I do not. There was something I think you already mentioned. The Pinot Noir. No, I don't have anything. But I have been taking notes, so I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Well, I know what you meant to ask. How can
What's
we
that?
Get these wines?
I was just going to say that. Give us your information. Give us, you know, your website, your emails, your phone numbers, address, your hours of operation. I mean, everything. So anybody who's out there listening can say, ooh, I'm going to be in that area a certain day. I want to go there. So give us everything.
Excellent. Yeah, boatiquewines.com. That's BOATIQUE wines.com. You can give me a call. And, in fact, any of Ron's listeners, I'll give you a Friends of Ron deal if you place an order here. The number is 707-279-2675. That's 707-279-2675. And also, we're open 4 days a week, Thursday through Sunday, the tasting room 11 to 4. But we also have stays on the site. So if you're looking for a nice off-the-beaten-path wine country getaway, also get a hold of us, give us a call, go to the website. We have everything from a one-bedroom cottage to a five-bedroom, the main estate house here, that are all available. We have turned into kind of the, you know, Patrick mentioned we're off the beaten path. It's kind of hard for us to get people up here, but we have turned into kind of the premier event center for the area. We did 40 events last year. Our showroom, when you deck it out, is just a beautiful place to have any sort of event, any corporate gathering. So give us a call and then get some of our wines sent to you. You won't regret it, because Patrick makes
Facebook
good.
Is just Boutique Wines at
Facebook.
Website, yeah.
Website is boutiquewines.com. Also, the new label, the new wines that we're doing, exitwest.com. Or, I'm sorry, exitwestwines.com. Right, Joey?
That's correct.
That's EXIT.
Yeah. And it's the mounts, you know, I'll tell you a little bit about the mounts, too, and why, you know. So the mounts came up with the name, as we talked about, Boatique, and, of course, it's because of the boat. And they thought it was cute, and Maddie really liked it, and so, of course, Bob said sure. And so that was that's the name. And as Joey just mentioned, you know, we've gotten rid of some of the boats and moved in more tanks, but also have a lot more room for some of these events like he's talking about. So, you know, there's some fun stuff we do in the cellar, like we do comedy nights even and theater productions and some really interesting things. And, but I wanted to say something, if I can, just about the mounts themselves, because, you know, the whole name Exit West, kind of how it came up was Bob and Maddie, they're both transplants, like a lot of Californians. But and
right.
Bob's family came over, Bob in particular, his family came over from Oklahoma. They were Okies during the Great Depression. And they you know, came over to California looking for work. And they settled in Napa, and very much on the wrong side of the track, so to speak, at least on the wrong side, as opposed to Maddie's family, who her dad was the one of only two physicians in town, and Bob was, you know, grew up very poor, but he excelled in high school. In fact, they both went to Napa High. They graduated Napa High. Bob was a star. He was president of his class, a big baseball player, actually went to Cal. And played, I think he played semi-pro for a little while, too. But Bob, you know, they ran a laboratory testing company in Santa Rosa for decades, did very, very well. And even, like, one of the, you know, they're very modest people. They'll never toot their own horn, but, you know, one of the things that Bob did as a part of a charitable act was he redid and basically gifted Napa High's baseball field to them.
Oh, wow.
The bleachers, the stands, the scoreboard, all that stuff. They call it Mount Field. So, you know, a lot of people that, you know, get rich and they decide, what am I going to do to retire, and they want to start a winery, they go take all their sack of cash and plant it in Napa. And they have no roots in Napa. They're not from Napa.
It's just Napa.
That's what they do, because that's what people do. And the mounts, especially Bob, maybe because of how he grew up, but he always, you know, he always rooted for the underdog. And so, you know, when Bob could have easily decided, well, I'm going to plant my stake in Napa, and had more credence and kind of, you know, more roots than most anybody, you know, most of the wineries in Napa, but he decided, I don't want to do that. I want to root for the underdog. And so he went to Lake County. And, you know, when they grew up in Napa, like if you grew up in the North Coast, Clear Lake used to be a big destination, still is, for recreation.
Right.
And when he grew up in Napa, that was a big deal about going to the lake back when he was young. And so that's when he found this property in Lake County. He decided, you know, that's what I want to do, a place for his boats, of course, but then also to start a little winery and try to make something really, really special that would really turn people's heads. And so his spirit, that underdog spirit, is what the Exit West label's about, what Boutique's about, and what I'm about, what we're about. We like the idea of trying to make something that totally bats above its weight class, you know, and just turns people's heads, knocks the socks off at a price that just makes them go, wow, you know, makes them go, this is a hell of a value. And so that's what we're all about.
As opposed to Napa's $200 bottles and all that and everything else. Comedy Night coming up on April 20th. I'm looking at your events here. You've got, the Easter egg, which is tomorrow. No, day after tomorrow. Tomorrow,
Saturday.
29th.
Saturday. Yep.
Saturday. By the way, as an aside here, tomorrow is Vietnam Veterans Day, National Vietnam Veterans Day. So I just wanted to point that out since I am a Vietnam veteran. Production of Still Magnolia is coming
that
up.
It just closed last weekend, but it was incredibly successful. We saw about 600 people come through for that show in the 2 weekends it was running here.
Oh, wow. I looked at the M and I was thinking May, and that's, so everyone missed it. That's what you get, people, for not checking out stuff like this. So,
but it sounds like we'll be doing another theater production in the future if Patrick so allows us, because.
I love it. I love it. It's not my way.
Yeah, once they got everything moved in, it was actually pretty nice in here with a real set. Turning a winery into a theater was kind of cool.
That would be fantastic, yeah. Well, it sounds like you guys got yourselves a great thing going there and something that's just, you know, full of fantastic product and a lot of love for what you're doing and for each other to continue working together like this. So thank you for taking your time to join us, and best of luck with you. When I take my major trip around the country, probably in 3 or 4 years, I will definitely include you as one of my stops. So,
yeah, please do, Ron, and thank you so much for having us.
Oh,
thank
you
so much, Ron.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Have yourself a wonderful evening now.
All right, take care, my friend.
Uh-huh. Bye.
All right.
Interesting. That was really a lot of fun. The concrete egg, I really think they should promote that more. I know wineries are starting to use it, but it's something that you never know about. And if it's not on the bottle, you don't know if you're tasting the wine coming out of the egg or what. So, you know, I think they should promote it. But that's just my humble opinion. So, there we go. That was fun. That was interesting.
Well, we have a guest next week, I believe.
We do.
From Dear Native Grapes Vineyard Winery. It's in upstate New York. And we'll have Alfie Alcantara, I believe is what you said, on April the 4th. So next Thursday will be
now,
that show. So,
let me give a little precursor to that. They are the ones we talked to. I can see his name and I don't know it. American Grapes, they do a lot of American grapes and different things there, so it should be interesting to see what they're growing and what they're doing up there. So that comes up next week, so tune in and we'll be talking to them, our Alfie.
Yeah, 7 p.m. Eastern time right here on Blog Talk Radio and social media and every place else. So tune in and join. We'd love
and
to have you
don't
us,
forget
so.
To tune in to Flightline Radio this coming Saturday morning, 10 to noon. Mike is going to be hosting the show live at noon. We'll have a repeat of this show. And then Saturday evening, he's got himself a new DJ that does 80s. Music at 8, or from, not 8, was it 8 to 10? Is that right? Yeah.
8 to 10, yeah, in the evening, yeah.
Yeah, 8 to 10 in the evening. And so that's Eastern time. These are all Eastern time. So I listen to Flightline Radio a lot. I put it on and put my headphones on, and as I'm doing anything at the desk or surfing or anything, I'm always listening to Flightline. So it's... It's a non-offensive station to listen to until Mike gets on. So
that's true. And then I'm totally offensive. So
yeah,
not offensive.
Yeah, little reverent and just But Flightline Radio. That's flightlineradio.com org. What?
.com. Yeah, flightlineradio.com. Yeah, cool. Thank you very much. Y'all have a great weekend coming up. Happy Easter.
Easter.
And Veterans Day. Not Veterans Day. Veterans Day. Yeah, I missed that part. But show some respect.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, show some respect. Let's do that. I don't know why it's just one day. They should extend these. I've always said that any of the military appreciation is like, it's a day. No, it should be more than a day for everything that they sacrificed. And, you know, a lot of them came home too, all that good stuff. But we could go on. That could be another show itself.
It could be. Yeah. Oh, thank you. I know. I talk to a lot of veterans in different places that I run across, and it's interesting stories that they have to tell. And I talked to a guy today. I asked him, I volunteered to do taxes, and one of the questions we asked every veteran, because the IRS wants to profile of how many veterans are being done. So I said, he said, yes. I go, oh, what branch? And he said, he was in the Army. I said, what years? And he said, 69 to 72. I said, wow, Vietnam? He goes, no, as soon as I got out of basic training, they sent me to MacDill Air Force Base, and that was it. No advanced training, no anything. He says, I spent my entire military service at MacDill Air Force Base. I said, as an Army man? He goes, yes. I thought, oh, my gosh, I never heard of that.
That's something.
Right out of basic training, got sent down there and just spent the rest of his time in MacDill. What an assignment.
Thanks again for tuning in, and we will talk to you all next Thursday or the encore on Saturday afternoon, 12 p.m. Eastern time. Thanks again, and be safe, and have a good holiday coming up. Yeah, if you have the holiday.
Yeah, happy Easter, and be safe out there. We'll see you next week.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebcr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
And we're off.